Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast comes from a skeptical point of view to try to answer the questions of why. Instead of getting right to the answers, we take the time to examine the questions themselves, because as the expression goes, sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. This show is born out of a combination of spite and the Streisand effect, thanks to someone on Facebook telling me that I should just stop making scary posts with scary logic to correct other people's crap posts and correcting their information. It is 2014, March 1st, my birth week, 39 it is. And this is episode number 007. Surprisingly enough, I'm not talking about anything to do with that. And it's got nothing to do with the number 39. I was thinking about making it episode 42 as a title, but we'll talk about that another time. Tonight we're going to be talking about dogma versus the scientific method. And yes, this is partly because of the debate that ended up happening between Ken Ham, the Amish Wolverine, four in a row, and Bill Nye. But believe it or not, this also came about because of something that came up on SciShow over on YouTube, and a very large thank you to Hank Green, who is somebody that I'm hoping that we'll be able to get on sometime. Not to talk about stuff from as an atheist, which to my best of my knowledge, I believe that he is, but more in the line of talking through stuff from the scientific point of view, from a learned point of view, and maybe even a slightly musical point of view. We'll see about that. We got a lot of stuff that we can talk about. We will come back to that. Joining me this evening from north of the border is Dallin.
Good evening, everybody. I guess for those of you who don't know me, the name's Dallin. I am indeed from Canada, north of the border, as Shujin said. Born and raised in a small town, baptized Lutheran before I was a year old. Was encouraged to keep an open mind all throughout my life, to which I gratefully thank my parents. Am relatively new on this journey of rationality, skepticality, and, you know, the final journey towards full atheism.
Okay. Also, Unrenown Tech.
Hello, folks. I live in the underbelly of Southern Maryland, and I come from a mixed religious background. And I've also studied other religions, too. It kind of makes you think.
Jack of all trades. And Witchy Bunny.
Hello. I am currently living in the city of Brotherly Love and Cheesesteaks, and grew up a Jehovah's Witness, and currently kind of still figuring out where I sit in all of this, but then I guess that's where what we're all doing here.
Can you do the cheesesteak dance?
No.
And I myself, as I've said on many an occasion, and oddly enough, I really haven't announced myself specifically. I am Shujin Tribble. I was born in Brooklyn, in the little tip that some of us might remember called Bedford-Stuyvesant, Bed-Stuy. If you listen to one or two of Billy Joel's songs, you might have heard it somewhere along there. I was raised on Long Island. I now live outside of the Buffalo region of New York, about as far away from New York City as you can get, and still have to pay taxes to this wonderful Empire State.
Go Bills!
Yes, I've had that problem. Anyway, all right, before we get going with this topic, I do have to remind everyone, if you would like to join us on these shows, please, by all means, feel free. You can catch us over on YouTube and watch directly from over there, or a little bit before airtime, I do put out the link to everyone on Facebook and Twitter and G+, to let everybody know about the show, so that you'd be able to join us. I do have David Lee currently chiming in over on the Q&A system, which I am trying to make sure that I set up ahead of time, and is asking, is it possible to invite? Unfortunately, the only invitations that I've got are specifically to be on camera and such with us. Those that do want to be on set with us sometime, by all means, send me information over via Gmail. You can hit me as shujintribble@gmail.com, all one word, shujintribble and give me some of your information and some of the stuff that you want to see about talking through, and we can see about having folks come on every once in a while as part of this roundtable. I've got no problem with that. My only request, of course, is that you try to remember, A, be civil, B, keep it to a PG-ish, which is pretty much what we're going to be doing anyway, just normally speaking, and C, until Heath finally catches up on the fisting jokes on Scathing Atheist, don't go there. So we're gonna hit that one really quickly. Dallin, you were having all kinds of fun talking about it yesterday. Did you have fun listening to Scathing Atheist episode? What episode was it?
Wow.
Episode most recent.
Episode most good generalized save there. Yes, I had an absolute blast, and again, I got to thank Nolan.
I'm gonna look it up right now.
Well, okay, folks. You know, he is a year older, and at that certain age, things do start to go. Like I'm one to talk. I just had my birthday this week too, which coincidentally, speaking of the Scathing Atheist, which we are wont to do sometimes, it actually was released on my birthday this week. So yay, hell of a birthday present! I get to laugh my ass off all the way to work. It was an absolute blast. And I have to say, for those of you that don't know about the show, Noah, sometimes, every time they read a book of the Bible, he tries to summarize it in rhyme. And the latest one he did, the latest one that the crew did was the book 2 Chronicles, or the second book of Chronicles. And Noah, of course, tried his best to make every stanza rhyme with the word chronicle. And I tweeted it to you before, Noah, but I will say it now on this show that your effort was phenomenal.
By the way, it was episode 54. I just looked it up, and the Facebook post that Noah had put on about it says, quote, "Gave myself a challenge with the second Chronicles poem. 8 stanzas. Each stanza includes 6 words that rhyme with chronicle. So how does one find 48 words that rhyme with chronicle? One cheats. A lot."
Dictionary.com?
Let's just say there were some creative plays on words there that would make most of my old English teachers probably all collectively roll over in their graves right now.
Well,
I just dated myself with that comment.
Yeah, let's hope they're not all dead.
A couple of them, I think.
Yeah, I was very happy about it. Tiny Tribble was over the moon about it.
Oh, no kidding.
Which he's... Yeah.
Hey, folks, let's just accept it. This won't be the first time that something was butchered in the name of religion.
Ouch.
Fair point.
Ouch.
Fair point. Fair point.
I'm thinking of animal sacrifice. Come on.
Of course, yeah.
Of course what do you think I was referencing?
Of course that, not like, the Crusades or anything.
Well... I've actually, there is a book I'm reading.
Oh, God, did I break him?
I think you did, yeah.
Well, what goes, I'm just passing it on from last night, guys, okay?
Yeah, she's getting paid.
Well, when, I'm actually reading a book right now on the history of the Freemasons, because I was curious about it, about some of their philosophies and stuff. And I gotta say, the amount of persecution, like a lot of people say, they're a secret cult and all that stuff, and they're, and all of that. The persecution that they faced at the hands of the ruling Christian, I guess you could call it the Vatican, or you could call it, any other kind of religious leader. The persecution and the resulting, I don't know what you could really call it, other than just, it was slaughter. Like, the first couple of chapters of that book, I'm sorry, World War II wasn't that savage. That's how that's how graphic some of this stuff is. Like,
well, let's
slaughtered in the name of religion? Yeah.
Let's be perfectly frank about it. I mean, if you think about it from a certain technological standpoint of warfare, mm-hmm. the stuff that they were doing, not to use a pun in any way about this one, it was damn bloody. I mean, arms and legs and necks, appendages lopped off, impaled. I mean, claptrops being used on horses, for Christ's sake.
Nasty.
You got to give them points for creativity, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's very, very.
That's about as cynical as I want to get for this.
Yeah, buddy, you sounded like you understood it. For the folks that are unfamiliar, you know what a claptrap is, I assume.
Yes, I do. You mean a caltrop?
Okay, I've heard it both pronunciations.
A caltrop. Okay, so would it be 1, 2, 3? Have you ever seen a D4? Guys.
Yes, I have several of them.
Yeah, it's basically that and pointy.
That's about the that's about the best description I could come up with, except with whereas a D4 looks like a pyramid, a caltrop is just, if you were to consider this like the wireframe of each of the points.
Yes.
Each of the points are hardened metal, steel, iron, whatever the hell they were being made out of, they were thrown across the area in order to, how can I best politically correctly put this, discourage horses from traversing.
Yeah, I just pulled up some images of them, and yeah, it's...
Yep, like I said, nasty.
And it would appear that we've lost unrenowned tech. All right, so tech will be back momentarily, I'm certain. So we'll get to that. Again, those of you that are watching and paying attention with me, thank you very much. I will keep a, you know what, come to think of it, I should really keep a lookout in my Gmail because I have gotten stuff once in a while where people say, hey, I tried to get signed into the whole damn thing, and it's not working. What's going on? So we shall see about this. Ah, see where part of this might be. David?
Hello there, Unrenown. He's back.
Yes, and very good there. At least I hope you're there.
Yeah, I think he's working on it.
Okay, fair enough. So that's G+ Gmail. We'll see how this plays out. Again, I apologize, folks. The full ins and outs of working the Google Hangout system is a little odd at times. I'm still, admittedly, I'm still trying to work through it. It's a good system for what I really want. Given the opportunity, I could have conceivably gone with Skype instead, but the video overhead would be positively hellacious, not to mention trying to record it all. Since I run under Linux, it's difficult at times, and I'm still trying to work it through. As you can even hear from my audio, I've got some stuff about the audio quality that is evading me for some reason. Personally, I blame Pulse Audio, but, you know, the hell do I know? There's nothing I can do about it right now.
I blame the spy.
Sure, why not?
Well, I mean, hey, if the show ever starts turning a profit, I can probably interest you in some Polycom hardware at some point.
Yeah, I see. The problem of it is it's not the hardware, it's the software. But we'll deal with that a little bit later.
Can you guys hear me okay now?
Yes. Yep,
we got you over there, Tech. Thanks, man.
You still have both your lungs?
Well, what happened was this: I muted my microphone so I could cough. Mm-hmm. And then it said, oh, you're talking to the audience. Why don't you unmute your microphone? And I unmuted my microphone when I was done coughing. And suddenly, microphone not working anymore.
Oh, fun.
So I think this might be a constant problem for me unless I can figure out why it's not unmuting when I tell it to unmute.
Kind of reminds me of...
Because I tried to open up my recording controls to check to see if the microphone's input levels... And Google Hangouts crashed. I'm like, dude, come on. It's not taking...
We're still in single digits.
Resources?
We're still in single digits. We're still very much a work in progress. Yeah. Speaking of progress, I'm not sure we're making much tonight.
Well, we're gonna get to that right now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
So tonight's topic is about the scientific theory, the scientific method versus dogma, and this is something that made itself readily apparent during the creation debate, which I've got a piece of information that's gonna kind of bring about a lot of this. So I've got a couple of screens I'm going to share off with you guys right now, one of which is a quote, and I've already used this particular graphic once before. And this was from the creation debate. And the question was free form from the audience. And the question was posed to both Ken Ham first, since it was his turn, and to Bill Nye. And the question was, effectively, what would it take for you to change your belief? How much would it take for you to change how you see everything? And the answer that Ken Ham gave is the following, quote, "Well, the answer to that question is, I'm a Christian. And as a Christian, I can't prove it to you, but God has definitely shown me very clearly through his word, and he has shown himself in the person of Jesus Christ, that the Bible is the word of God. I admit that that is where I start from. I can challenge people that you can..." Wow. This is just...
Yeah, I know it's painful.
The problem it is trying to read through it, since he was doing it off the top of his head and just talking, structurally it becomes a little untenable for me sometimes. I apologize. "I admit that that is where I start from. I can challenge people that you can go and test that. You can make predictions based on that. You can check the prophecies in the Bible. You can check the statements in Genesis. I did a little bit of that tonight. I can't ultimately prove that to you, right. All I can do is to say to someone, look, if the Bible really is what it claims to be, if it really is the Word of God, and that's what it claims, then check it out. And the Bible says that if you come to God believing that he is, he will reveal himself to you and you will know. As Christians, we can say we know. And so, as far as the Word of God is concerned, no one is ever going to convince me that the Word of God is not true."
In other words, he just said, short version, too long, didn't read. "Nothing you say or do will ever make me change my mind. I am completely closed in my..."
Yeah.
That's pretty much exactly what it comes down to.
Well, at which point the debate ceases to be a debate and was nothing more than, on his side, was a 2.5-hour diatribe.
And
nowhere near as good as Noah's.
He said that there would convince him because he refused to be... He handed the whole debate to Nye. He just said, "Here, you win. It's all in your care."
Well, you're assuming he went in on good faith anyway. You're assuming he went in on good faith anyway. He didn't.
I try to keep a semi-optimistic outlook, but unfortunately the pessimist keeps winning.
Sorry. No, I'm not.
Oh, I wasn't talking about your pessimism. I was talking about the little voice in my head.
You know, they do have meds for that, you know.
Yes, worst case scenario, if you really can't afford the meds, you can always just buy a couple of Duracells and lick the lithium off the inside. Yeah. Now, the other half of this...
Told me that was a good idea.
The other half of this was the response that Bill Nye had, which followed Ken Ham's. Again, because of the way that the structure of the debate happened out, the question was posed alternatively from one to the other as the first respondent, if it was... back and forth. So for Bill Nye, his answer was the following, and I quote, "What would it take for you to change your mind? We would need just one piece of evidence. We would need the fossil that swam from one layer to another. We would need evidence that the universe is not expanding. We would need evidence that the stars appear to be far away but are not. We would need evidence that rock layers could somehow form in just 4,000 years, as opposed to just the extraordinary amount. We would need evidence that somehow you can reset atomic clocks and keep neutrons from becoming protons. Bring on any of those things, and you would change me immediately. That is what this whole thing is about. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to look up the I'm also going to look up the part of the diatribe that Noah had from this past show. So, Bunny, I'm going to throw it over to you for a couple of moments for your thoughts on this so that I don't have to be switching the video back and forth.
Honestly, I mean, is this just my thoughts on the whole general dogma versus scientific method thing, or...
Well, however you'd like to touch on this one.
Honestly, I don't want to touch on it too much because you're going to go where my thoughts are here in a moment. You're looking up exactly what I'm thinking about. But just the very short version of it is, I feel like, and forgive me, this is going to sound a little bit insulting, but on one hand, you have someone very obstinately, you know, sitting there and crossing their arms and going, well, this is how I say because I say it is, and nothing you say is going to change my mind, and just that's it. That's how it is, and you know, no proof, no anything. You know, just this is what I believe. Therefore, my perception is reality. And on the other side, you have, well, I have things here that are observable and that I can prove in an observable, logical way that this is how this is. So if you can follow this method, then, you know, you can change my mind. And I'm sorry, one side feels like a very mature way to handle things, and one side feels like a very, for lack of a better word, immature way to look at things and to address things. I mean, honestly, if I believe something and I receive information that contradicts what I believe and I can verify that it is true, I change my mind because the truth to me is more important than what I want to hold on to as far as belief. But then that's just me.
Okay. Tech? How about you? Did you want to chime in while I'm trying to get your video to actually be live here? What's going on here? Here we go.
Yeah, since I was fooling around with the settings, trying to get everything working again, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, if you wanted to chime in on or give your thoughts on any of this.
Oh, the whole debate?
Well, what we've got so far, as far as to, you know, Ken and Bill, so far at least.
I think I've already said it. It was basically is that one side came to the debate hoping for a debate, prepared for a debate, and presented their side very, very well. And the other person came to a debate preaching. Not debating, but preaching. And refusing to see, you know, not only their own viewpoint, but the opposition's viewpoint. When you go to a debate, you have to see both sides of that coin to truly successfully debate. Otherwise, you're just somebody on a soapbox going, listen to me, look at me, you know, I'm right, everybody else is wrong, nanner, nanner, nanner. And I know it sounds childish, but that's exactly how it comes across when you don't do what I just said you should do.
Yes, it's called soapboxing.
Yeah, there's really nothing else that I can say about that debate other than if you buy the DVD, it goes to the profits of the Kenningham Museum, so I wouldn't recommend buying the DVD.
Long live YouTube downloader.
I didn't just hear that.
For what it's worth, and I will admit it, I downloaded it so that I can look it over at a later time. I have every intention of really going through it a lot more later because I came in a little bit late to it, but I still had my...
Don't feel bad. I actually missed the first half hour of the debate. So yeah. I actually went back once they posted it. I was trying to watch it, and I couldn't watch it because it wouldn't buffer. I'd get like 5 seconds, and the whole thing would crap itself.
Yep.
And, you know, YouTube A little known secret, if you go to youtube.com/HTML5 and you switch it over to HTML5, a lot of those buffering problems tend to go away if the video is available in HTML5 format. This wasn't, so I used the downloader to actually do the download so I could watch the beginning that I missed, and then I deleted it. So, you know, that way I wasn't accused of going around and spreading and, you know, what was all that stuff? The Digital Millennium Copyright Act or all that other crap?
I'm
not a terrorist.
I am not a crook.
we can talk about that a little bit later. All right. Down, I'm going to give you a couple of moments on this one afterwards. I found the piece I was looking for. Now, with Scathing Atheist, as some of us who have listened to it know, and if you haven't yet listened to it, please remember, you need to take a grain of salt with it. Their entire MO is mocking. That's the whole point of it all, in order to get the point across. So what the diatribe was all about this time was talking through what we were talking about on the last show, or part of it. What would it take for you to have enough evidence to convince you that there is a God? And the way that Noah was talking about it on his diatribe was that he continued to think about it after we were done with the show and over the successive days, which I thought was very, very flattering, because that meant that what we were talking about and how we were going about it actually resonated to a bit with him. Now, admittedly, the show's pacing is far, far slower than his, and that's intentional, so that you're not just getting the really quick reactionary answer. You get the time to really just think it through. Now, with that being said, what was said during the diatribe was, like I said, what would it take to convince you that there is a God? The diatribe continues on as follows, quote, in this case, he was talking about me, because I was the one that posted it. Quote, he was pointing out, of course, that God was failing in his charge to protect the faithful. Why wouldn't... Sorry, scratch that. I got the wrong paragraph that I'm looking at. I was thinking about all that while the other panelists offered the typical answers. All good answers, mind you. Things like running a chemical process in reverse, stopping all aircraft in flight at the same time, speaking to everyone in a language that they could all understand. But when it came to my turn, I lowered the bar of evidence. Instead of looking for what it would take to make a believer out of me, I looked at it, what would move me into the maybe category? What would it take to give me pause? And when you look at the question like that, God's job gets pretty damned easy. So God, if you want me to stop doing the show, here's all it would take. Show me evidence that churches are less likely to be hit by lightning. Just show me unambiguous, verifiable data that shows that a place of worship is statistically less likely to hit by lightning, or earthquakes, or hurricanes. Show me evidence that devout people are less likely to get cancer than heathens. Show me that people who are prayed for recover quicker than people who aren't. Show me just one tiny shred of statistically significant evidence that there's a reason to even ask the question, is there a God? Now, with that in place, which is a sublimely beautiful argument, and I am on board with that. I'm not getting rid of my ideas about, you know, what would be my pieces, but for the idea of taking it from the there is to the maybe it's even worth asking the question, I find that to be a beautiful, absolutely, positively beautiful argument. So I'm going to give it over for you at this point, Dallin. You've got both of them from Ken and Bill. You got this from Noah. What have you got for us so far on that?
Well, in terms of – Bill and I really said it best. It would only take one piece of evidence. Now, of course, in Bill's case, he said it would take one piece of evidence to make him – to turn him into a believer. And as a as someone who is – you know, who was a scientist, he – has no doubt in his life come across things where we have said this can't be done or this is impossible because this. and science continues to evolve. Like, look at our journey towards manned flight, for instance. There are numbers of videos out there where you see people who try to invent the airplane. Quite a few catastrophic fails.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, which would say, and people have said, well, if God intended us for us to fly, he would have given us wings. Well, okay, but we still kept at it, improving via scientific method of, you know, experimentation, hypothesis, trial, error, recovery, examination, try it again. And eventually, Kitty Hawk happened. Eventually, we had the biplane, the triplane, the jet, the commercial liner, the supersonic jet. Now for us, flying via machine, grant you, is almost as natural as walking. If it weren't for flight, I wouldn't have the job I have right now. Look at where they said we'd never make it to the stars. You know, if God had intended us to do that, he would have made us something else. 1969, we put a man on the moon. In 12 years, if you are to believe the Mars One website, within 12 to 13 years, we're going to have a colony on another planet.
Well, the beginnings of one.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I was around when the internet was still a pipe dream, when it was nothing more than a communications medium between universities to exchange information. For billable time, I might add. I was around when a 4-inch green screen on an Apple IIc was considered cutting edge. I saw the evolution from the 5.25 floppy to the 3.5 floppy to the hard drive, which was a real confusing one for me, because I actually thought when they said hard drive, they meant the 3.5 floppy. And you're holding up a USB key, correct?
16 or a flash drive? Gig. 16
yeah.
Gigs.
Okay. Wow. I've got a 64 gig micro in my phone, okay? So I know exactly what you're talking about. All of that came from the scientific method, from somebody posing a type of hypothesis, experimentation, evolution of technology. And what would dogma have told us? That we still had to trudge around in the dirt? That... Mm-hmm. We couldn't wear blended fabric clothing.
Oh, I'm sure.
But believe me, there wouldn't have been much for habitable zones here on Earth if we had to actually obey that. Because, yeah, cotton's good, but I live in Canada. You need something a little bit tougher than cotton.
Lots of cotton.
Yep.
Love
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
There's a really tasteless joke I am not going to make right now. We'll talk it off the air. By the way, for those people that are kind of wondering about it, yes, off the air. This is so much not even close to PG-13.
Yeah, cows are truly a gift of nature. Coats and cheeseburgers.
Oh
and
boy,
boys got a. Boy's got a point right there.
And a milkshake, too.
Yeah, all four food groups and something to wear.
As well as assless chaps, because if they had asses to them, they'd be called pants. Remember that truism.
All chaps are assless.
Yes, okay. Now the partially tasteless part is out of the way. Question come up from David, who's listening in right now, watching. Thank you very much, by the way, for the piece over here. And, well... It's coming through the Q&A system. It's more of a comment. You people view the world as math. And believe it or not, I've got something for you on this one.
What's wrong with that?
Yep, and this one comes from our good, close, warm, personal friend of the show, Richard Feynman, who is, we're going to, just like with Noah, we're going to see about having him on the show sometime. And Richard Feynman was an incredible scientist, researcher. He did some really amazing work, very important work. And one of his quotes is the following, which I have here up on the screen. If it disagrees with experiment, it's wrong. In that simple statement is the key to science. It doesn't make a difference how beautiful your guess is. It doesn't make any difference how smart you are. Who made the guess? Or what his name is. If it disagrees with experiment, it is wrong. The point of it all is, do we view the world as math? No, we don't view the world as math. We view what happens in life as statistically important. And there's a big difference, because with statistics, Tech, follow me on this one. This is something that Fujin taught me a long time ago. In statistics, numbers don't lie. Your presentations, however, can.
Exactly. True? Very, right. Very true. You're spot on.
Okay. Now, Fujin, I mean, I love you. You taught me so very much.
I hope you weren't calling me.
No. No, we're not supposed to
talk about that kind of moment.
Yes, for those of you that are wondering, Fujin was my wife of 12 years, and I miss her dearly. Anyway, the point of it is, the data that you're referring to, how we might be viewing the world as, quote-unquote, just math, and I'm using that term. You did not, David did not write just, because that's something that we talked about last time, because adding just to something really diminishes the importance of whatever it is. So I'm adding that in there for a second, for contextual color for a second. This is not something that David meant to put in there, so just bear with me a second on this. Statistical importance is how we define what happens in life from day to day, from minute to minute. As a matter of fact, it is an integral part of the human condition, the human species. I am thinking of one thing in particular that truly, absolutely quantifies that as a truism. And Dallin, I'm going to put it to all three of you guys to see what you think of. To you, what is the one overriding piece that truly confirms that we as a species actually conduct statistical analysis of every event of every day? It's a really easy answer. It really is.
Can I give it a go?
How about her?
That I've actually caught myself doing is driving. When I get behind the wheel, there's statistical analysis to prove when your radio's on, you're mildly distracted. If your phone's ringing or it's buzzing or something or other, you're getting more distracted. If you look over to the car next to you and you see that person driving on the phone, most people's immediate reaction is, if you're not one of them doing it in the first place, is, oh, God, that person's extremely distracted. Statistically, they run a higher risk of causing a car accident. I'm in the car next to them. I could be injured if they come over into my lane. I'm either going to speed up or slow down. You know, and depending on how fast you're going, you may actually choose to slow down because you may already be exceeding the speed limit. And if you're going too high, too fast, there's more statistics to prove of accident. So there's a lot of people who actually do that without thinking. It's all subconsciously done. They're doing the statistics because of what they hear on the news constantly of car accidents, distracted driving, and everything else. You hear it on the radio. You read it in the newspapers. Well, for those of us who still read newspapers, you know, some people have the Nook or whatever. But your brain's actually processing that information that you're getting bombarded with. And so even though you may never have taken a statistics course in your life, but you pay attention to the news, oh, yeah, you're doing it. Even if you don't know you're doing it, you're doing it.
All right. Let's see, because you were looking for it. Go ahead, Bun. What do you think?
You can see the wheels turning in my head, huh? A couple of things. I was trying to figure out if walking in and of itself was something that, you know, could be something we handle statistically. Because, I mean, statistically, you know, say walking up and down the stairs, we assume that the stairs are going to be at a particular height. Most of the time we're right, statistically. Sometimes we're very, very wrong.
Wow. I'm just thinking of some of the stairs over by the college over at SUNY Fredonia, which are like 3/4, instead of being 8 inches tall, they're like 6 inches tall. And if you've never tried to walk up 6-inch stairs, it's amazing how much of a difference those 2 inches are for you. Just let it go. Let it go. It was not intended that way. Dallin, you've had your chance.
Actually, I do have to agree with both of them. Every moment of every day, awake or asleep, you are playing with statistics. There is a chance in the middle of the night something's going to happen. You're not going to wake up the next morning. You've beaten the odds if you do wake up in the morning. There's odds that once the alarm goes off, there's a chance that you may overreach, miss your alarm, and end up rolling out of bed. Thankfully, that hasn't happened to me yet.
Decker.
Living where I do and given the way the weather's been lately, there's a very good chance that when I step out my door, I am going to slip and fall because, well, there's ice and snow all over the place. I get on a bus full of people. Need I remind you about the guy who was on the Greyhound who actually beheaded somebody not too long ago?
Yeah.
It's just every day, unless you are trapped inside of a bubble, there is a chance that something will happen to you. No matter how astronomical those chances are, the chances are still there. So, yeah, we live in a world of statistics and probability every single day. However, just because of that, just because we do, I see David Lee's statement here, we view the world as math. I don't. I understand that there's mathematics and probability and all that wonderful stuff in everything I do, but it does not take away from my appreciation visually, aurally, and I mean that by ear, if I've used the right thing.
Yeah,
any kind of sensory input that I get, sight, smell, taste, sound, sensation, anything like that, how we acknowledge how the world works, be it mathematically or otherwise, doesn't take away from that appreciation. I can't really say whether or not it enhances it, but I still view the world as a wonderful thing. I just don't view it as, at the risk of sounding crude, just because I don't view it as something that was blown out of a sky god's butt doesn't mean that I don't appreciate it.
Well, considering that some of the creation mythologies are especially from Japan,
I remember studying some of those origin theories a very long time ago. Sweat, breath, other things. Let's just say I would almost say they were a little more
creative.
creative, yes, and not really as clean.
Yeah,
is a good word for it.
I can definitely say I agree with you, Dallin. And David Lee's statement of you people view the world as math, first off, don't go around saying you people. That usually tends to get you into trouble when you say it to the wrong person. Luckily, you're talking to the wrong person right now, so we don't take offense to it.
Yeah, we're all a bunch of cream puffs here.
We're pretty much easy going, so it doesn't really bother us.
Yeah.
But seeing the world as math, I can't speak for the rest of the guests here, but I can say that I do see a lot of math in the world, and I find math to be extremely beautiful. I see it in art. It doesn't detract from the art for me. I see the artwork for the underlining emotion behind it, as well as the math behind this particular brushstroke, pressure, angles, and in music. I did choir, I played guitar, I played trumpet, no comment. And, I didn't just see the notes on the paper. I could see the increments of going up or down. I mean, math is all boils down to you're either adding one or taking one away. That's what it all boils down to. Even the most, even the high math all boils down to add one or take one away. So when you're in music, you're seeing the notes jump up and down on the page. It's the same thing. It is math. There is math in music. And when I listen to music, I can hear those kinds of changes in the notes, and it's like, oh, somebody just did something really different. Most people, when they would hit this note, would only go down one or two steps. This person went a whole 3.5 steps, and it actually worked out really, really well because it sounds like this. So you can actually see math as an art form. You can hear math as an art form, and baking is math. You're baking using science, precise you methods. Eat. So baking
I like all
is
of those
math
words.
That you can eat, just like Witchy said. So math is in everything. And if you refuse to accept it, well, you refuse to accept it. I'm
math
not going to
tell
you that you're being an idiot, but right in front of you. If it's right in front of you, why ignore it?
Yeah. Now, the way that I was looking at this, and like I said, from trying to describe us as a statistically aware species, for me, it boils down to a very simple acronym. North, East, West, South. Ooh. News. The newspapers categorize on a daily basis, sometimes a bi-daily semi-daily basis, the events of what is happening around the world and outside of it at this point. You want to go from one day to another and try to find out, okay, we've got this class story that we're going to work on. We're going to go ahead and we're going to plot out what was the weather like through the year for school this year, kids, and we're going to try to figure out what was the climate for this year that you've been in class with us. Statistics is, again, the conclusions can lie, but the data itself, as recorded to the best of ability, cannot. And that's why you end up with things like people posting pictures. Wow, I'm glad I got this pop shield over here. People posting pictures onto Facebook and G+ and Twitter who have got these things that say, here is a picture of the Arctic Circle and all the sea ice on this year, and here's another picture of it 10 years later, and look, there is more ice 10 years later than there was before, so this whole global warming thing and the ice is shrinking, it's all bullshit. No, because you're trying to deal with something that is a fluid and dynamic statistical anomaly that has to be examined over the course of time with two static points, and you can't do that.
To further point out Shuchin's point, to put a finer point on it, according to math, if you're going to do that and just look at the points, according to math, motion does not exist. And I say that in this way. Say you take an arrow through flight. At each moment, you can pinpoint that arrow's location on a graph as it moves through flight. Well, in math, a point is not movement. A line is movement. But each point on that graph is an arrow, is where that arrow was at that point. If the arrow's at rest at each of those points, mathematically, the arrow is at rest even as it's moving. Each simply can't do it.
Or how about the fact that the arrow could never possibly hit the ground because as it travels, its distance decreases by half and by half and by half and by half, and it keeps doing so infinitely, so therefore it could never truly touch the ground.
By hyperbola.
It's interesting math, like the engineer who proved that a bumblebee can't fly.
Which, of course, as we've learned all from the doctor, that's exactly what it's all about, bumblebees.
The bees appearing.
Yes, but as far as to viewing the world as math, I don't think that anybody, even a physicist, even a theoretical physicist, I don't think that any of them view the world as math. I believe that they view math as an interpolation of what happens in reality, to describe what is happening. Not just to say there was a car accident on Highway 3 at mile marker 7. They would use math to describe this car had a velocity of blah, and it had a drag coefficient through the air of blah, and the friction with the road was blah, and it was mitigated by the weather because there was liquid, and it was blah, and there was this much surface area, which is blah, and...
Now you're sounding like one of my teachers.
It depends on how far down with this rabbit hole you really want to go. If you want to say that we view the world as math, there is so much that could be done. If you think of it in terms of taking it to the extreme example, the view of the Matrix with the code falling down around you. I mean, you could take it to that extreme as an example. I'm not making fun of it, but I mean, if you really wanted to think of it really down to the very essence of it all, you could conceivably see it in those kinds of terms.
I'm starting to wonder, as I stare at this statement on my screen more and more by David Lee, is starting to look a little bit like what David Lee is really concerned about, is that we see people as mathematical formula and statistics and numbers, and that we don't see them for their personality, for their emotions, for their contributions, for what they are as an individual. Because, I mean, if you think about it, a person's very nature, their personality, It is unique to each person. Granted, plenty of people have things in common, but no two people are exactly alike, not even twins. True. And it seems like, you know, it might be a statement made by somebody who's worried that people, a fear, basically, that if you don't believe in God, then you obviously don't value the person for what they're worth. Unless you put a mathematical formula behind them to figure out their worth. And that's not the case. That really isn't. You know, I see people for, you know, whether, you know, if they're loyal to, like my coworkers. Well, we're a loyal bunch. We all work together. We support each other. We're there for each other. I don't see that as a mathematical formula. I don't see them as a statistic. I see them as friends and caring people, regardless of whatever their religious or faith backgrounds are or lack thereof. Some of them understand where I'm coming from in my lack of a theist doctrine, currently anyway. And they accept me for it. They don't see me as less of a person for that, and they definitely don't see me as a mathematical formula. So if that's your primary concern, David, if you are listening, no, even me, somebody who really loves math, I don't see people as mathematical formulas. Do I see some of their actions as statistics? Sure we do. Every time you see somebody do something stupid, it becomes a statistic. Why? Because that's what we do as a whole across the world. You know, which, 50 million people fall down the stairs, it becomes a statistic.
Which is whole reason why we have the Darwin Awards.
Exactly. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that the person that fell down the stairs isn't your best friend in the whole world. It doesn't change them from your best friend into a statistic. It just means now they happen to have done something that is statistically probable, or maybe it's improbable. Maybe they did something that maybe only one in a billion people in the world ever do.
Though to be fair, we're all statistics in one way or another. So honestly, in the end, it really is all about who the person is, and you know, not whatever mathematical statistic that they fit in.
Speaking of
statistics, don't see math as a way to dehumanize people. That's just not right.
Yeah. Yes. And speaking of people who are statistically significant with falling downstairs, down, go right ahead. You know what I'm thinking of.
Do it.
Oh, boy. I'm trying to remember.
I fall downstairs. It hurts.
Yeah, we're thinking of a particular individual. if we're going down a rabbit hole, the gentleman who a few years ago in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who had decided he was tired of life and was going to kill himself by throwing himself down a flight of stairs.
Of all of six stairs.
Yes, a flight of six stairs, who shall now remain immortalized Because hey, if you're gonna be remembered for something, you know, just as long as you get your last name right, he is now known as Tumbles the Stair Dragon,
which was freaking hilarious.
You'd be better off if you really wanted to do something like that, like jumping off a roof and trying to land face first on the pavement.
I'm thinking less suicide attempt, more attempt at really what he thought would be an insightful publicity stunt, but cataloged as epic fail, I think.
Yeah, it pretty much covers.
We have a question from Ross.
Yes, we do.
Interesting questions.
I've actually been thinking about it for a bit.
I've actually got one on this, actually.
Let's read it first.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And for future awareness, folks, if you have been emailing in comments and suggestions to the show as far as the topics, please forgive me if I have not answered to all of them to at least say, yes, I got them. Again, still kind of working my way through, getting the bugs out of how all of this stuff is supposed to work, even the offline stuff. Ross had sent this over through email before, and it's something I've been kind of thinking through a little bit, along with several other questions. I also told the rest of the panel about one of the other ones that you had sent over, and we've pretty much all agreed that the questions that you have asked, or at least the one that I gave them as an example, have a lot to them and are going to take a little bit longer for us to go through and talk through. And I'm going to make sure that we've all got time enough to really digest the question itself, because there's a lot in there. So thank you on behalf of all of us. You know,
yeah, and don't stop asking questions, Ross.
Please don't.
Please don't stop asking questions. That's what we see that a lot in certain religious indoctrinations, people who take it to the extreme and they don't want their flock to ask questions. Asking questions is key. And it, believe it or not, it actually does, I forget where. If somebody of you guys know where it is, chime in. There was somewhere in the Bible, I can't remember if it was in the Old or New Testament, that actually said, you know, ask the question. You know, ask questions.
It sounds like something Jesus would have said in response to the Pharisees' teachings and the way they did their business within the temple, honestly.
Yeah, it sounds very possible and very likely. Again, it's another one of those things that we're going to have to do a little bit of homework to find out about. And again, we're still kind of getting there. That ends up opening up another piece. Very quickly, one of the radio or podcasts, I forget what it was, I think it might have been Ask an Atheist last week, had posed the question of, how do you tell the difference between dogma and advocacy versus, oh shoot, what was the right, propaganda. That was advocacy versus propaganda. And I was driving at the time, and I thought, wow, this is actually a really good question. And they basically came down to, propaganda says, this is the way that it is. Don't look behind the curtain and see the magical man behind there with all the bells and levers and dials and knobs and things. Versus advocacy, which says, look it up too and see that I'm not telling you the wrong thing. Which I think is a brilliant, brilliant way of putting it. Uh-huh. So I just wanted to add that in there because, I mean, I love you guys. Sam, I'm going to get you on the show one of these days, Sam. I promise. Anyway, he owes me. Uh-huh. So the question that that Ross had asked, and thank you for being patient, concerns the Big Bang Theory, and this actually goes back a little ways to a couple of shows. Posited by MIT physicist / astronomer / colleague of Einstein, and somebody help me out on the French on this one.
Georges Lemaître.
Okay, thank you very much.
So Schleicher-Hoffmann.
Not Hubble. He was also a Catholic priest. The first part of this whole thing is that it was not Hubble who had discovered the Big Bang. Posited. The Big Bang, sorry. As opposed, Hubble did not first, and Georges did.
Yeah.
So keeping that in mind, this is known scientifically. It is documented. Come back to that in a second. He was also a Catholic priest. What was he not seeing that you do? Now the question itself is. I'm not sure that I'm entirely on board on the the question as stated. So I'm going to throw it over to you guys because I'm kind of remembering the previous versions of the question, because as I had remembered, the question was a little different from what I've got over here. Bun?
I feel like the question's assuming a sort of arrogance on our part that I'm not sure is actually there, that we're seeing something that a MIT physicist who is also a Catholic priest might have. So, I mean, it's like, you know, you're saying if he posited the Big Bang Theory and, you know, we're seeing something that he's not, well, I guess my question then is, what is it that you think we are seeing that puts us above and beyond someone who, with such credentials, honestly? That's kind of my first question for that.
Well, everything I'm seeing here, I did a little, once the question came up, I've actually got the Q&A window open here. Once it came up, I did do a little digging for Monsieur Lemaître. And did come up on his history, and of course I went to Wikipedia.
shame on you, Dallin.
Oh, hey, you know, I can't exactly come off with all of these things right off the top of my head.
I'm sure you can.
More accurate than some of the publications out there, so don't feel bad.
Well, I mean, I'm not as good as I used to be when it came to keeping a hold of history. You know, I am getting on in years. Anyways. Now, yes, he did posit the Big Bang Theory, which at the time came under a lot of scrutiny from people like Eddington and Einstein. Although, while Einstein was skeptical of the theory as a whole, he did not discourage Lemaître from pursuing it, which is probably a good thing considering what we believe has happened today. I did find one interesting thing, though. In 1951, Pope Pius XII declared that Lemaître's theory of the Big Bang proved a scientific validation not just for, well, for both creationism and Catholicism. However, Lemaître resented the proclamation and actually convinced the Pope, along with the Pope's science advisor, persuaded the Pope not to mention creationism publicly anymore, and the Pope agreed. Because while he was indeed a devoted Roman Catholic, he was against the mixing of science and religion.
Hmm.
So to hear a question like that, it's not that we're being arrogant. It's again, you're asking a question like that saying, well, he was a Catholic. Well, I am still a Lutheran. I have not officially renounced my church or anything like that. But I have pursued a career in, okay, it's computational science, but it's a science nonetheless. But now, does that mean that if I were to somehow make a discovery, does that suddenly mean that the Lutheran church that I am part of suddenly gets credit for that? It doesn't. It's my theory. Regardless of what or who I am, I have made a contribution to science. Same with Lemaître. He made his contribution to science, but he was not, and he even said he was against mixing religion and science. He understands that there's a separation between the two of them. So the fact that he was a Roman Catholic, okay, that's one facet of him as a jewel. if you take sort of the gem look at it, that was one piece of him. It was not all of who he was. You know, as far as we knew, maybe he liked baseball, assuming it. Yeah, there was baseball back then. I was just saying, like, just going back to some of the some of the dates where he's around, though. Maybe he was an Elvis Presley fan. Does that suddenly mean that Graceland played a part in the Big Bang Theory? Probably not. Like, just to single a person out like that just does not. I would definitely not say that we're being arrogant. But at the same time, that question does strike me as a little arrogant.
Okay.
And he's saying, read the rest of the quote.
All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we'll come back to that. Tech?
I actually have two things to say based on the question that I'm seeing. One is, you know, there's a lot of people who say, who have created mathematical formulas, or they've gone a little bit further in their sciences than what was accepted before. And I'm talking about humanity in the past. I'm not talking about what's going on right now. I'm talking about what has happened already, what's been documented. And at some point, they reach a kind of a T in the road. And they either have the option to say, okay, well, I can no longer understand any more of this. I'm going to say that anything that I can't understand beyond this point is obviously God's will or God's work. Granted, their mental faculties isn't saying that to them. They're just stopping at that crossroad and going, oh, I don't know anymore. I can't figure any more out. This is beyond me. It's obviously God's will. It's God's work. Or you'll have the other type of person who will go, I'm stuck. Why am I stuck? And they'll try to keep looking for ways around their stuck, where they're stuck at their point. They won't automatically just say, oh, I can't learn anymore. It's up to God at this point. So I'm not sure if, what is he seeing that what is he not seeing that you do that made us an atheist versus him being a Catholic priest? There were definitely people who were religious in the past. Was it Newton who created calculus, if I remember correctly? Isaac Newton. At some point, when he got done using calculus to talk about basically the orbital rotations and whatnot, he gave up and said, it's God's will, it's beyond me. Boom, done. Whether instead he could have continued to use his knowledge to expand himself. And if you want to see a really good presentation of the kind of concept I'm talking about, go on YouTube and look up, type into the search box, Neil Tyson presentation about intelligent design. It's about 40, 45 minutes long. It's a really good watch. It's got a lot of wonderful, useful information. As for the second thing, I don't know what he really did not see that everybody's different. Some people only take a little bit of information and use that little tiny bit of information to turn themselves into a supporter for one religious faith or the other. What is it that the Muslims see that the Catholics don't? Or what is it the Catholics see that the Jews don't? What is it the Jews see that the Muslims don't?
Yeah, there's
everybody's different.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. All right. Bun?
I've said all I can on this subject at the moment.
No, fair enough. Dalton, you've been looking really hard at that one. Was there anything else that you wanted to add on to that before we...
No, I was just trying to read the rest of it to see if there was something that I didn't see about it. And I don't know what I see in the Wikipedia here. It just gives a very comprehensive history of himself, his discovery, how it was, like I said, met with skepticism at first, but eventually, I can't really say vetted, but it did. It has become the predominant theory as to the beginning of the universe nowadays. And I was just going out to read more of his, just more of his accomplishments and. It's a very interesting read, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's absolutely a lot of stuff. And I don't know about anybody else, but the last time I remembered hearing Wikipedia, for all of its flaws, for all of its openness, is reasonably consistently accurate. Mm-hmm. Now, it is not by any stretch 100%, but then again, depending as to what level you want to go with, you could even go as far as to say that the good old traditional Encyclopedia Britannica is not completely 100% accurate all the time either. There's stuff that has been proven to be incorrect or slighted or a typo or supplanted with new information. So is it good? Is it bad? It really depends on a lot of different pieces about this. However, there was a question that had also been brought up about this topic, and I want to hit this one really quickly, although it's not part of the Q&A right now. Part of it was also, at some point, why was Hubble given all of the accolades for this discovery versus George's? And the best example that I can give for this is the telephone. Commonly, Alexander Graham Bell is considered the father of the telephone, although, going back through it all, it would appear, and in some cases rightly so, or so it's been, so is what it seems to be, that someone else, let me double check over here. Shoot, I was trying really hard to, like, look over a whole bunch of stuff simultaneously of listening to what was going on and trying to find the information about it. But the, here it was, Elisha Gray has since been acknowledged as the creative inventor of the telephone as we know it today, and not necessarily Alexander Bell. Does that change the fact that they both came up with what would appear to be similar ideas and concepts using the knowledge of the day? I don't think it changes anything in the fact that it one is credited versus the other. Was there a slant specifically towards Bell? It's entirely possible. I mean, he was an incredibly hard worker. He was not the... I may be overpainting him a little bit, but as I understand it, he was not always generous. I'm probably pulling the wrong wording for this because I've got like four different things running through my head right now. Not necessarily have been generous with the praise of the people who was assisting him or who may have done more of the perspiration than he, but he's gotten many credits, many, many credits, arguably more than anyone else that's in modern knowledge. That doesn't change the fact that Gray came up with this, or at least brought it to the attention first. Now, is that similar to what happened with George's versus Hubble? It could very well easily have been.
We were talking on the show that we do, not to interrupt you, Shujin, but we were talking on the show last night that Shujin, Dallin, and I do about certain people who don't necessarily get the credit that they deserve for their contributions, and it sounds like this is just another example of that.
Yeah, I got you on that one. And we're getting very close to killing on out of the show, so let me go ahead and tackle this last question from David. And Ross, thank you. Ross had asked another one. I'm going to hold on to that one for another time because I'm not specifically familiar with that one. And again, it's another one of these things where you keep giving us these really dense questions that really require a little bit more, you know, homework there, on.
There's
so,
no one,
thank you.
Yeah, Ross, you give us questions that don't have one-line responses. They require and, actual research and well-thought-out responses.
And you're firing them off at a very rapid pace. Give us time.
But please continue doing so because it's questions and statements like that that keep us on our toes and make us not only, well, we want to make the show as good as possible. And to do that, yeah, we do have to knuckle down, do our homework, and for lack of a better term, sharpen our blades on a few things. Questions like that, statements like that, do help us to hone those talents so that we can provide a good informational thing. And also so that hopefully we can either answer the question or at the very least, make it so that you don't look at us like we're a bunch of idiots. Just saying.
Very much so.
The other thing that I really like about your questions, Ross, is that you ask a true question. You put a little bit of you put some research and energy into your question. You put thought into it, and you word your questions for the most part very, very well. You're not going, well, this, that, and the other thing. So this obviously proves God exists. Go ahead, debate that. You know, you're not putting them like that. And so it's much easier to sit down and literally talk to you from our point of view and not have a hostile environment. And that's what we don't want. We don't want a hostile environment, and you're doing a great job.
Yes, and on behalf of us all, thank you. That is really, really helpful for especially this early part in the series. We'll see how it progresses. But Ross is also reminding me that the origination of it all was Bill Nye specifically credited Hubble as opposed to George's. And please forgive me, it's easier for me to just say George's than the other piece that I cannot. I'm sorry. I would much rather say the right one than mangle somebody's name improperly.
The gentleman we were talking about previously.
Yes.
Nice generic there.
Yeah. The scientist previously known. The scientist previously known as that guy.
Schlegelhoffen.
Right. The short answer to was Bill Nye specifically crediting Hubble instead of George's because of a bias is certainly possible. However, the short answer, I believe, and the most accurate short answer is, no, sorry, the two short accurate answers are, we're not Bill, so we can't speak for him, but considering that he is not an astrophysicist or an astroscientist of any description, I think it can very easily, the argument can very easily be made that it was an oops versus a bias away from somebody who was theistic. I mean, I love science, I love space stuff, but I did not realize that it was not Hubble that didn't first come up with it. By the same token, I did not know that it was Elijah Gray that had originally that first brought the telephone to light for a patent, and that it wasn't Alexander Graham Bell. So, I mean, and telephones are ubiquitous technology. I mean, let's face it. The friggin' Amish have a communal telephone in some areas for serious emergencies. That says something right there. And I wouldn't think that they would know themselves just because of that. So like I said, before we get on out of here, we've got this last one from David. And unfortunately, this is going to end up being a short one, David. Not just because we're running out of time, but unfortunately, it sounds like this is one where we're going to end up clipping this question really, really hard. So please forgive me right away. The question goes as such. There is God and devil. Why? Well, the media trying to pervert us. Subliminal messages like sex in every movies prove why they are doing that to separate us from God. Devil exists, man. Now,
sounds like an email from my ex. Improper grammar.
Well,
tech.
I'm sorry.
Nice.
I'm sorry.
It's nice.
All right. Please remember,
folks. It's hard.
I understand it. I will always read these as written, simply because I don't want to put in my own bias towards the questions themselves that are, or the statements that are postulated to us. I'm going to end up doing enough of that just with my own inflection as I'm talking, and that's not something I can do anything about. I mean, really, that's just going to be inherent, and I recognize that as hard as that's going to be for me not to do, it will simply happen just because of the nature of talk. So here's the problem and why I'm going to cut this one really clipped close, and I'm gonna give you guys a thumbs up or a thumbs down on this one because that's how much time we got to go with. There is God and devil. Clip. Stop. Full stop at this point. Where? The biggest problem with this question is it postulates right there as a truism that the God and the devil, first off, which ones, are existent And that is a debate in and of itself as to whether or not that's even valid to begin with. Mm-hmm. Bunny, yay, no, thumbs up, thumbs down.
I'm going with you on this one, too.
Tech?
I'm going thumbs up, but I can answer the other part. Why is there sex in movies? Because sex sells, because sex is inherent in every living organism that is, you know, not asexual.
Mm-hmm. And Dal?
I'm going to have to agree with you there, Shujin. There is God and Devil. Please give me their names. Please tell me which ones you're referring to, because in the history of humanity as a whole, there have been a pantheon of gods and devils from just about every single culture on Earth.
Yeah, which one are you, Jehovah, Yahweh,
which ones are you referring to?
Yeah, there is a lot of that. And it's like I said, not trying to downplay the question at all. There are some pieces that are very interesting there, not the least of which is how much sex should be, needs to be, should not be in any particular thing, and what is the cultural significance? What has it does as an effect? Or is that level changing in reference to what is happening with society at large and how things have been changing? There's a lot to that question that is very good. There are pieces of it, like I said, that piece, the theological piece of it, simply can't get behind right away. Not because it's an atheistic standpoint, but because the question itself, just that piece of it, needs to be answered first if we're going to accept that piece as true, as written. That is something that we may end up tackling one day. The real question of, is there a God, is there not a God? That is a really, really tricky question to get through because density. I mean, there are so many pieces about it. How many theologies do we examine? How far back do we go? Do we have to go through with finding translations? How much information can we do? Or is it perhaps a question of how far into the future are we able to extrapolate in order to say, you know what, maybe the answers aren't going to be here for another 2 minutes after I die. It's a really, really complicated question. And in truth, that is one of the best parts, because that's exactly the kind of thing that I've wanted this show to end up being. Yes, it's a plodding pace to get through the stuff, but as I said, the point is you're not going to get a backhanded response from any of this stuff. You're not going to get an off-the-cuff thing that somebody could just, you know, laugh about. And as much as we collectively, over here on this side of the screen, enjoy the hell out of the Scathing Atheist, a lot of that stuff, even though it's scripted and they work really hard on getting the density level really high on their jokes, it comes across as feeling like it's just off the top of their heads and they're just backhanding, bitch slapping all the stuff as quickly as they can, when in actuality they're really thinking hard on this stuff and writing and rewriting and really making the stuff work. And that's one of the reasons why I am so thrilled that they joined us last week, because we got to see, because they were with us live with no script to work off of, they're smart. They're really smart about what they're doing, and I respect the hell out of them for that.
And on that note, I'd like to address something with David Lee, who wrote your post, and I kind of cringed at it. The reason why I cringed is because it reminded me of back when I was having an incredibly hard time with sentence structure. And my sister, who is a communications professor, never had the kinds of problems that I did. I always found math and science easy. I found writing to be very hard. And so it wasn't until she sat down with me and worked for me over many years until I could start writing out sentences in good form and things like that. So the reason why I cringe is it just reminded me of my own personal failings that I had to overcome at a key point in my life. And what I want to say to you is that, you know, we understood the nature of your question. It wasn't a bad question at all. But to me, it sounded like you were really trying to spit it out very quickly. What you may want to do is, because you've got a whole another week until we do this again, is if you have more questions that you want to ask, write them out in advance. Sit down, reread them, make sure they come out sounding exactly the way you want them to, and then publish them to us. And that way it'll be even easier, because then you'll have exactly what you want to say on the screen with even less room for misinterpretation. And that goes for anybody, actually.
Yeah, absolutely so. And again, if you would like to send those out my way via an email, as always, send it over to shujintribble@gmail.com. Please remember, shujintribble, all one word. And in the subject line, please do put holy crap so that I can keep track of them. It's great to get these, because it means that not just that you guys are interested, but that we're doing something worthwhile. And I don't know about the rest of everybody else, I find that really, really helpful. Not just because I feel like we're doing something worthwhile, but because it helps me to think. And one of these days I will do a thing, kind of an in-between thing, where I will kind of go through and explain a lot more about why I want to do this and why it is helpful for my gray matter. You know what? There was something else I was going to end up hitting on. I'm going to deal with that one afterwards. All right. Anyway, let's go ahead and get our butts on out of here. Dallin, thank you, Chief. You stay warm up there.
I'll do my humble best. It's so let me check the temperature here really quick. Oh, it actually went up a little bit. For those of you who are in the Celsius way of viewing things, it is currently minus 29 here. We're buckled down pretty hard.
Holy shit.
Wait a second. That's just air temperature?
Yeah.
What is it saying for
what?
I didn't check wind chill because I figured that number would just be good enough for you.
Oh, jeez. Damn. You stay warm, dude. That kind of weather will kill a person.
Well, and you see, that's why when I said, you know, the whole thing about one single fabric, I've got a jacket that's made out of several layers of materials. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's as close to a spacesuit, but I sure feel like an astronaut when I put it on. Like, I kind of go out like, you know, the Michelin Man type of thing.
Then you go crashing through New York and yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, for those of you that are not Celsius inclined, that's negative 20 Fahrenheit, which means damn cold. As I've been saying to many...
No.
I was going to say, on the upside, at least my beer is staying cold. Which reminds me, I better go check on it.
you can cool a pie in a heartbeat. Wait, are you sure that's negative 20 Fahrenheit? I thought negative 29 Celsius would be even lower in Fahrenheit.
Hold on. You know what? I'll double check my conversion. I may have it screwed up somewhere. But meanwhile, have your getting on out of here.
It's minus 20 Fahrenheit, just so you know.
Oh, it is. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I did my math wrong. See, even I can do things wrong.
That's why you're an app for
that. But you're not standing by your original claim, so that's progress.
Wow.
I should put that in my dating profile. I'm making progress. Yee.
Oh, boy. Okay, we're circling it right now, folks.
Exactly. Unknown Tech, thank you for your night again. Thank you, man.
Have a good night, everybody. And, keep the questions coming. You know, even if you don't think you can word them the way that you want them, keep them coming anyway, you know, because it keeps everybody's mind asking why? One of the best questions in the world. Why?
Yep, absolutely. Bun.
Everyone, take care. And hope to see you guys in, what is it, 2 weeks?
Yep, exactly right.
That's right.
Next week, we have a bye, partly because it is my birthday.
Woo!
Sort of. Actually, my birthday is coming up in just a couple of days. I am.
Hey, your birthday's Monday, isn't it?
Actually, it's on Tuesday, which is great because it is my usual day off from DJing and such, which means I can enjoy having 39 candles on my cake again. So
does that mean Wednesday night we're going to hear all about the hangover?
It better not, because he needs to be functional by Thursday.
That's you know what, I'm gonna take the fifth at this point, because my what?
Well, ironically, Wednesday is the fifth.
I'm gonna have to take a few fifths because of that now.
I'll join you. I got some right over here.
I'm on board for that too. Anyway.
No.
Welcome to the preview of the outtake reel, folks.
Anyway.
Why do I have a funny feeling I'm going to be the center of that thing?
Fortunately, we don't have a blooper reel to work off of at this point. More fortunately, the pre- and post-show information is not recorded, so... In any event, as always...
Only you knew.
Truly.
No horns.
Truly, it is our honor and our pleasure and our privilege to be here for all of you who are watching. Those of you that have come after the Scathing Atheist to see what is this crap that the guys are talking about, thank you for being patient in listening, most importantly. Like I said, we absolutely adore what they do over there. Amongst other groups, Ask an Atheist, the Thinking Atheist, the Atheist Experience of Austin, the Geologic Podcast, Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, Cult of Dusty over on YouTube, SciShow on YouTube, so many different groups that if you know about us, if you don't already know about these groups, just shame on you. Go find them, because as much as I want to have people on my side, believe me when I tell you, if our pace is too slow for you, if you don't want to go into all of this stuff the way that we do, the pace that we do, please check these guys out. Because as far as I'm concerned, it is far, far and away more important for folks to get the information, to get to learning, to really opening up to all of these different things and experiences and understandings and learn, than it is for me to get numbers. I would much rather have that. Somebody best put it in, I forget who it was that had the a book that recently came out where he talked about micro-inoculations. He was specifically talking in terms of micro-inoculations of knowledge against theism of all kinds. I don't think of it in quite that instance. I think of it as micro-inoculations of wanting to learn. That is far and away much, much more impressive to me and much, much more important for any of us.
Actually, Shujin, if I can pop in for a moment, I believe the book you're referring to is this one. It's the Manual for Creating Atheists by Dr. Peter Boghossian.
Yes, that is the
one. Just so I can brag, this is indeed a signed copy after I shook Dr. Boghossian's hand when he was up here in Calgary for a CFI presentation. But he does talk about micro-inoculations and refers to religion as a virus.
Yes.
In it.
Yeah, which is, the argument can very easily be made for that. But we're not going to do that. Not going to talk through that kind of stuff because, like I said, for us, the important part is to talk through, understand, decode, demystify all of the underpinnings of what it is that we want to ask, what we want to learn about, before we even wade into the water of what is something. Like I said, at the whole top of it all, the biggest question of it all is why? And once you understand that, so much more comes into focus. Again, Next week we are off, which would be the 9th. I will be in Toronto, which you will also be up there in Toronto. So our next scheduled show is going to be the 16th. Same bat time, same bat channel. We will, of course, be looking forward to seeing you guys. I am giving serious consideration, as I've said before, to having a scheduled not safe for work show. I don't know if maybe every 10th show, so that people know for well if it's a 10th show. Oh, got to watch out. All right, is it marked for? Yeah, there it is. Not safe for work. All right. Mostly because it would be nice to be able to kick back, to really kick out and just let loose.
Does that mean on the 10th show I won't have to wear pants?
We'll discuss.
I was actually thinking for the 10th show we should see if we can get Dusty Smith on here because he kind of wrote the book on NSFW.
That's, you know what, that's...
Get him and Noah from Scathing Atheist. That ought to be a hoot.
Oh, I suddenly just had a match to a powder keg analogy going through my head.
No. Not a match to a powder keg. You're talking about a match to a whole train load of a freight train load of dynamite.
Okay, I was all right. Yeah, I can run with that.
No, I think I can cover this one a little bit better.
Newcomb from orbit.
No, actually, I'm gonna put the camera back on Bunny for this one because I think her reaction is going to be best suited. Hun, you tell me. A match not to dynamite, not to a whole bunch of powder kegs, a match to bees. With that,
boy.
With that, maybe what we'll do.
Stop it.
What we will do sometime soon, one of the next shows, we will see about really telling you guys about some of these in jokes and what some of the stuff means so that you've got better context for it all. Because I know full well some of this stuff is going to be flying over people's heads, and they're going to be wondering what in the hell we're talking about. Trust me when I explain that it will not be nearly as bad as what you think. It will not be unsafe for work. It will, if and or when we finally do a not safe for work, it will be specifically noted in the show information. So we'll see about that. Having Dusty on, you know what? I'll make the approach and see what happens. The worst that can happen is, of course, say no. Okay. Meantime, those of you that are watching on YouTube, if you would like to become part of the circle on G+, so that I can let you know when the shows come up, please approach me over on G+. I will add you to the circles, and if I do not see a comment on YouTube for whatever reason, please forgive me. Sometimes I don't get notices from YouTube that, hey, you've got a new comment that you should really look into. I don't know why. So again, I'm kind of looking back through the stuff and trying to make sure that I'm keeping track of the stuff. So if I don't reply to something, please ping me one way or another and let me know. In the meantime, as always, those of you that are in the cold right now, this incredibly brutal Arctic cold, please stay safe. Please, please be safe out there, especially if you're driving. Thursday, my usual 45-minute commute was 2 hours. That's how nasty it was with people playing bumper cars. So,
well, for you out there that are having trouble staying warm, if you happen to have an AMD card in your computer, overclock it. It will heat your whole house.
With as funny as that might be, there's nothing necessarily wrong with taking that and using that because every little bit helps, especially if you have to. Absolutely. And also as an item on that, if you are able to boil water to raise the amount of humidity in your apartment, house, whatever it is, that will help also. You can keep... You don't have to have the house as hot, but still feel a little bit warmer.
I'm actually going to add one more thing for those of you, because for those of you who might have heating oil, because heating oil tends to be a fairly expensive form of heat. In a pinch, diesel will also burn in an oil furnace, just so you know.
To be on the safe side, double check with whoever it is that.
Yeah, double check. But I mean, in a pinch, it'll keep you warm for maybe a day.
Yeah, and of course, kerosene heaters, ventilation as much as you can. Please.
Yeah, that's the only problem with them is the ventilation ends up killing up the heat.
Yeah, I know it's a big old pain in the butt, but no matter what, just be safe. That is the most important part.
Here's a very helpful trick, because this actually happened. If you have electric heating in your house and your heater goes out, turn on your electric oven and open the door slightly and let that bleed the heat into the house. Just stay near the kitchen. Make sure somebody's near the kitchen so that they can turn it off. But set it to about 250 to 300, and that'll bleed off a lot of heat into the surrounding areas. So if your heater goes out, but you have and you have an electric oven, turn that bad boy on. Yeah, your heating bill's going to go up, but it's heat or die in those kinds of temperatures.
Yeah, and just be very, very careful. We've gone way over my usual, so apologies, but thank you. We'll definitely cover all this stuff another time. Be safe out there. Please be safe. Most important piece. Want you coming back. And if you know other people who would like to find out about these, please, by all means, feel free to share, feel free to comment, and just know that we really appreciate you guys taking the time and spending part of your time with us. My wife, I love you. I wish that you could be here for next weekend, because I miss you on. Matane Fujin, dream of me. And of course, as always, for all of you, on behalf of the entire crew over here, I wish you the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you all well. Again, next week is a bye. We will see you on the 16th of March of 2014. Until then, be safe, and we'll see you soon. Good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.